ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। Today we will see the summary of chapter 5 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called as Karma Sannyasa Yoga, Yoga of Renunciation of Action. Now, sannyas is a very high state of evolution in the spiritual path. So, all that we need to take into account is, before coming to this chapter called as Karma Sannyasa Yoga, Sri Krishna talked about Samkhya Yoga, Karma Yoga, and then Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. The first chapter I am not taking into account because the first chapter is Arjuna Vishada Yoga. The individual called as Arjuna fell down due to his emotional upheaval. So his emotions overtook him and he fell down. So we are not taking that into account. Once Krishna started the Gita, three chapters, highest philosophy, practical karma yoga he emphasized, and then he talked about 12 yajñas, which we saw on Monday, how to convert each and every activity into worship. Thus, slowly, slowly, the mind comes to that state which is called sannyas. So we have seen this before. Sannyas, when you say, or renunciation in English, it is not giving up, it is growing up. Remember this. Renunciation is not giving up, but renunciation is growing up. When the... I think somebody's microphone is on. Can you please put it in mute? Yeah, thank you. So when an individual through knowledge evolves to a higher realm, the lower automatically falls away. That is called renunciation or growing up. You don't give up. They fall down. Today you have a certain value for certain objects. When the intellect educates the mind about the insignificance of that object and the mind rises above it, that state is called renunciation. So, if you still continue to have the value for it, but you don't pursue that, but mentally remain preoccupied with that, you are still not in a state of renunciation. So renunciation is a state where your mind becomes free from the preoccupation. And once your mind has become free from the preoccupation, thereafter you may be occupied in the world due to certain obligatory duties, obligatory necessities. But you are still in a mental state of renunciation. So renunciation is growing up. So the common example we give is, when the flower matures into a fruit, the petals of the flower automatically fall away. If you forcefully remove the petals, it will not become a fruit. But when it matures into a fruit, the petals automatically fall away. So when the child who is caught up in the toy world is slowly exposed to the cycle world, then the child's attachment to the toy world reduces. As a result, the toy world gives up the child, or the child's mind rises above the toy world. Similarly, from cycle world, it goes further and further. So basically, therefore, renunciation is not a forceful exiting. It is a conscious, knowledge-oriented growing up. So therefore, we say renunciation is knowledge. Renunciation is not running away. Today we are running after. When you run away, doesn't mean you are renounced. You find people either running into money, towards money, or running away from money. Either way, in their thoughts, only money is there. They are money-centered. Being rooted in money, one is running after money, one is running away from money. So running after and running away, it doesn't matter what you do physically, but you should not be rooted in money. That's about it. Money is only an example in the context. Anything material. So this is what Sri Krishna has been teaching. But Arjuna has not understood that fully. Or you can take it up as a clarification. He is asking a question in the beginning of this chapter. So this chapter is a very small chapter. It has only 29 shlokas. And the shlokas are divided into four topics by Swamiji. So in the beginning, Arjuna asks, what should I follow? Should I follow yoga, which is karma yoga in the context, yoga of action? Or should I follow renunciation? Which one should I follow? This is his question. Tell me conclusively, what should I follow? So the topic from verse 1 to 7, the first topic is yogi, meaning karma yogi, an active category of person. Then sannyasi, who is an ascetic category. And the other one is jnani, enlightened person. Yogi and sannyasi are both in the path of yoga to unite with the origin, the self. And jnani is one who is united with the self. So, verse 1 to 7, the first topic talks about yogi, sannyasi and jnani. It starts with Arjuna's question. In the first verse, Arjuna is asking, you seem to be talking about renunciation of action. You are preaching it. O Krishna, you preach renunciation of action and again yoga. This is karma yoga, the path of action. Tell me conclusively which of the two is better. Somebody went to Socrates, one of his students went to Socrates and asked, should I get married? The fact that he is asking, should I get married, he is having thoughts of marriage. It is very clear that marriage is not for him. He will not have the confusion. So Socrates said it is better for him to get married. So he said, yes, by all means get married. If you get a good wife, you will be happy. If you get a bad one, you will become a philosopher. So whenever a question is asked, the answer the guru will give also depends upon the questioner. Here, questioner Arjuna is a man of action who is full of desires. When a person is full of desires and vasanas, and if he sits down in meditation, he will only frustrate himself and become a hypocrite, like he said in the third chapter. Karmendriyani samyamya ya aste manasasmaran indriyartan vimud atma mityacharasa uchyate. This is what Sri Krishna said in verse 6, chapter 3. So, when you have too much of desires, but you don't give a direction to the desires through karma yoga, basically you are not acting upon it, but mentally keep thinking about the object of the desire, then you become a hypocrite. And you will go through frustration, you will not fulfill the desire, because to fulfill the desire you got to act. And by thinking about the object, the desire is only going to increase. Materially you are not going to fulfill the desire, but the desire will increase at the mental level. And the world in front of you frustrates you, agitates you, you continue to be in hell. And spiritually also you will fall because you will be increasing the vasana. So therefore, Sri Krishna advised you to engage your organs of action in the spirit of karma yoga, whereby you will fulfill the desires also, you will reduce the vasanas also, you will be happy while doing the action, everything. So therefore, just like Socrates told his disciple, by all means get married, because he assessed the student requires marriage. It is not because he considers everybody must get married. Similarly, Arjuna is asking the question, you are praising renunciation of action, but you are asking me to get into action. So should I follow action or should I follow renunciation? So, Sri Krishna, again, it's like whatever happened in the third chapter is happening here. There also he said, Jayasi chet karmanaste matabuddhir janardana tatkim karmani gore mam yojayasi keshava vyamishreneva vakyena buddhim mohayasi vame tadekam vada nischitya ena shreyoham apniyam. This is what he asked in the third chapter. You seem to praise knowledge, but you are asking me to do action. Which one should I follow? This is what he asked in the third chapter. Similar question he is asking here also. Should I follow renunciation or action? Then Sri Krishna starts answering from verse 2. He says, Arjuna, please understand, renunciation and action both lead you to that absolute bliss. Both will take you to that goal. But when you have too many desires, you got to act. It's only through action can you attain actionlessness. The mind should become free from the preoccupation. Nothing to do with occupation. So initially you occupy yourself performing karma yoga. Thus slowly, slowly your mind will become free. This is the advice he is giving. In second verse, third verse, fourth verse, fifth verse, sixth verse and all that. All that he is saying is, when you continue acting in the world in the spirit of karma yoga, slowly, slowly, the bulk of the desires drop. The reason being, while doing karma yoga, your identification is with the goal, the supreme, the higher. You remember, elaborately we discussed this when we did the fourth chapter, 12 yajnas on Monday. When you do an action in the spirit of yajna, there is a dedication to the goal. There is a dedication to devatas, or there is a dedication to Brahman, relative or absolute goal. So you are not thinking of the desire that you will fulfill through the action. Thereby the vasanas drop. And your mind is also focused in the action, whereby you fulfill the action correctly. As a result, the object also comes and the vasanas also reduce. So this is the way, by converting the action into yajna, you drop the desire. It's all Krishna is saying. So thus, therefore he says, O Arjuna, even though both will lead you to the highest supreme bliss, Brahman, renunciation, O Mahabaho, is hard to attain without yoga. Without functioning in this world in the spirit of karma yoga, it is almost impossible to come to state of renunciation. Impossible. If you find people like Adi Shankara and all have come to state of renunciation without going through karma yoga that much, it is because people like them had gone through karma yoga in the previous genma. So, technically, the path is like this. Through action, you come to renunciation. So, yogi slowly, slowly becomes a sannyasi. What is the difference? Both are working for Brahman. But one, in the beginning, cannot directly conceive of Brahman. Therefore, he conceives of self-development. Then, slowly, slowly, he comes to a state where the worldly objects and beings do not excite him anymore. Therefore, he keeps the goal of Brahman and works for it. And finally, one merges with Brahman, who is called as Jnani. So, this is the difference. The extroverted, introverted, enlightened. So, yogi means extroverted person. So what is the difference between yogi and a bogi? Both are extroverted, But in the case of a bhogi, there is no dedication for a goal. For him, kao piyo maja karo is the goal. That's all. For a bhogi. Whereas for a yogi, he dedicates it for a higher. He controls his personal desires and everything, and dedicates for the higher, and whatever comes out of that, he fulfills. Yajna shishta shina bhujaga. Meaning, after having contributed in the spirit of yajna, he partakes what comes out of it. That is called yogi. So thus, when you start functioning as a yogi, slowly, slowly, the vasanas drop, then you become a sannyasi. Now once you become a sannyasi at the mental level, now you can decide whether to take sannyasi lifestyle, or you need not take sannyasi lifestyle, you can continue being in grihastha ashrama, but for all practical purposes, mentally you are a sannyasi. So that's all he's saying. So that person comes to the level of asceticism, where his requirements are minimum, barest minimum. Living with minimum worldly stuff to be able to focus upon the higher. I have already discussed this before. In when you are in grihastha ashrama, it is called karma pradana ashrama. When you come to sannyasa ashrama, it is upasana and jnana pradana ashrama. So upasana and jnana is the predominant factor in sannyasa. In yoga or karma yoga, action is predominant. Karma yoga is predominant. So from bodily engagement, you move to mind intellect oriented approach. Physically, you are not running around that much. That is called sannyasi. Then through upasana, dhyana and jnanam, knowledge, you merge with Brahman. When you merge with Brahman, you become Brahman. And then that is what he talks about in verse 7. He who is united by yoga, who has purified and conquered the self. Conquered the self means who has conquered the individuality, the mind and his senses. Conquered the senses, who has realized the self which is in all beings, who sees self in all beings in the self. Even though he is acting, his action is thereafter not tainted. That's all. Thereafter, whatever he may do, his action doesn't get tainted. Why it doesn't get tainted, he's of course going to elaborate it later on. But in one line, if you want to say, why his action doesn't get tainted, because he has no kartritva bhavana. The moment you do not have kartritva bhavana, your action will not taint you. Taint you means it will not incur sin, nor will it incur virtue. There is no path, no punya, no taint whatsoever. Doesn't matter what you do. So whenever you do an action underlined by awareness of the Atma, it does not taint you. So this is the first topic from verse 1 to 7. Yogi, active, rises to sannyasi, ascetic, and then rises to jnani, enlightened. Once he becomes enlightened, thereafter there is no more vasanas. This is what we say. Sanchita vasana, prarabdha vasana and agami vasana. Agami means the vasanas that are yet to come. Understand it like this. All of us have bulk of vasanas, which is called a sanchita, total. From the total, the papa punya that is readily waiting to fructify, which pushes you to this birth, is called prarabdha. And then while the prarabdha, which is manifested as human being, you have the capacity to add to sanchita or remove the sanchita completely. The new vasanas you create in this janma are called agami, which adds up to the sanchita. But if you work in karma yoga spirit, you destroy the sanchita. And once the sanchita is destroyed, only prarabdha exists for all practical purposes. You are a jnani, the sense merged with Brahman. The body is working. That's all. Thereafter, whatever you do doesn't create any agami karma. There is no agami karma for a jnani. So therefore, he says his vasanas, his actions are not tainted anymore. That's it. There is nothing taints his actions thereafter. Simply expresses the prarabdha. And to explain this prarabdha, we have discussed this example of fan. When you switch on the fan, and the fan is rotating at the speed of 5. And then when you switch it off, even though the electricity is cut, the fan will not come to a halt immediately because of its initial momentum. The initial momentum will make the fan rotate for a while, and when the momentum is exhausted, the fan will halt completely. Similarly, all jnanis will function according to their momentum. Saint Tyagaraya sang and sang and sang kirtans. Ram Tita, Swami Vivekananda, they all lectured and enlightened this world with their lectures. Swami Ramana Maharishi just kept quiet. Silence is what he practiced majority of the time. Very few lectures, talks here and there. So, various saints, according to their prarabdha, they existed. But whatever they may do, Upanishads go to the extent of telling us that one jnani was even a butcher. Even being a butcher, he has no taint upon the action. That to understand that, you require tremendous objectivity. So he says, although acting, whether acting like butcher or whether acting, singing, dancing, doing business, or in the Kshatriya field like King Janaka or like Sage Vasishtha, it doesn't matter. Whether whatever may be the action you do, according to your prarabdha, it does not taint you. No more agami karma. Only simply express the prarabdha. That's all. So therefore he says there is no more karma for a jnani. Then how does jnani, sannyasi and yogi relate to action? That is the next topic. Next topic from verse 8 to 12 is how do these three people relate to action? So remember this. Yogi, active category, extroverted category in the beginning stage of spiritual path. Sannyasi, ascetic category, introverted category, evolved state of spiritual path. Jnani is the enlightened category, who is the ultimate state in spiritual evolution, which is the individuality merging with the total. So how does one act after having merged? How does one act in an evolved state? How does one act in the beginning state? All these three he discusses from 8 to 12. So yogi, sannyasi, jnani, they are called yuktas. The opposite of that, which is ayukta. Yukta, ayukta. Yukta means one who is centered in the self. Ayukta means one who is not centered in the self. So therefore, he says, jnani, how does he function? He says, naiva kinchit karobi iti yukta manyeta tattvavit. Tattvavit means one who knows the Atma in essence. Now, we don't know Atma in essence. We only know through the scripture. We've heard about it. We've read about it. It is not come in our experience. So, therefore, we can't call ourselves as tattvavit. But a jnani is tattvavit, who's intuitively knowing, who's become the Atma, who's merged with the Atma. So he says, such a person seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, tasting, going, coming, opening, closing of the eyelids, everything, whatever happens, voluntary and involuntary activities. That's all you need to understand. There are some activities which are going on voluntarily. For example, breathing. Your eyes are opening and closing. All that is happening voluntarily or involuntarily, including your seeing, hearing, which is happening voluntarily. Breathing is happening involuntarily. So, any activity which comes under any category, whatever is going on, he understands that I am not the doer. What does he understand? He says, naiva kinchit karomi iti. I do nothing at all. Atma does nothing. Atma is only being there and living. In the presence of the sunlight, everything is happening. The murderer murders. A doctor saves life. Both are happening in the presence of sunlight. But sunlight is not responsible neither for the murder nor for the saving. So, exactly like that, in my presence, the senses, the mind, the intellect, organs of action, everything is functioning. I do nothing at all is what he knows, he understands. That is his inner conviction. Therefore, he says, the senses move among the sense objects. The senses are dealing with the sense objects. I have nothing to do with it. Absolute Sakshi Bhav. Remember this. You should not have Shatru Bhav nor Mitru Bhav. You should have Sakshi Bhav. When you are living in this world, slowly, slowly, as the knowledge goes into you, you become a Sakshi. So that's what he's saying. He becomes a Sakshi for everything that is happening. There is no doership whatsoever. 100% evolved person has 0% doership. So therefore, he says, he does nothing. He just maintains Sakshi Bhav. How does a sannyasi then act? I already touched upon this. A sannyasi dedicates it for Brahman. For him or her, the world doesn't excite anymore. How does it matter what the world gives? The world will keep on changing things. It's the same, the clay. Today they'll make pots, tomorrow they'll make a jug, day after tomorrow they'll make a cup. So these things keep on changing. The same thing, like in kaleidoscope, glasses are crushed and put in. Different colored glasses are put in. Each rotation will bring in new pattern. But the permutation combination of the same thing. In Gujarat, if you go, combination is same. Coffee, where there is milk, decoction and sugar. But in Gujarat, sugar will be more. You go to Punjab, milk will be more. You go to South India, Chennai, decoction will be more. But end of the day, it is all the same permutation combination, same tamasha going on. Everything comes under one category, which is called even this shall pass away category. So sannyasi is in that mind state where he clearly understands these are all passing, fleeting things. So the mind is moved away from him, from all that. Only interest is get back to Brahman. I don't want anything else. So therefore, simple living, high thoughts. This is how a sannyasi lives. So sannyasi dedicates all actions for the sake of Brahman. So in sannyas state, there is more of chitta ekagrata practice. Chitta ekagrata practice you can come to only if you have some level of chitta shuddhi. So a sannyasi is one who has attained some level of chitta shuddhi. Therefore, Now, having attained that Chitta Shuddhi, the practice is more in Chitta Ekagrata. So, they conceive of a form, Alambana, some symbol, which could be gross or subtle. Gross is the form, subtle is fire, subtler than that is mantra, especially mantra Om, etc. So, through that, they practice Upasana and they practice Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, Jnana, that is predominant. So, a sannyasi dedicates action for Brahman. This is how a sannyasi relates. Then yogi, how does he relate? I told you already. Yogi is one who cannot get into Chitta Ekagrata at the moment because he needs to now focus on Chitta Shuddhi. Chitta Shuddhi ke liye, he engages his body mainly. Therefore, for self purification he functions. So, he functions mainly for self purification. So, Atma Shuddhi is the purpose for which a yogi functions. So, therefore, he does karma yoga predominantly. So, yogi relates to action, keeping self development or self purification as the goal. Sannyasi relates to action, keeping Brahman or self-realization as the goal. And Jnani has merged with the goal. Therefore, a Jnani is acting with absolute objectivity like an actor on the stage. Absolute Sakshi Bhav. Gunas are functioning. I have nothing to do with it. Senses are going on doing everything. I have nothing to do with it. This kind of attitude with which Jnani, Sannyasi, Yogi relates to action. So he says, Yukta, having abandoned the fruit of action, attains eternal peace. The Ayukta, impelled by desire and attached to fruit, is bound. So therefore, in the case of a Yukta, there is Bhakti. See, remember this. If Bhakti is not there, it ceases to be yoga. Karma plus bhakti is karma yoga. Similarly, upasana plus bhakti is upasana yoga or bhakti yoga. Similarly, jnanam plus bhakti is jnana yoga. Bhakti is nothing but love. When the emotion is directed to the lower beings, you call it love. When you direct it to the higher, you call it bhakti. You say, I am devoted. Bhakti means devotion. I am devoted to my parents. I am devoted to my guru. I am devoted to my work. Similarly, you say, I love my dog. I love my children. So, when it is towards the lower, you use the word love. When it is towards the higher, you call it bhakti. So, he says, in the case of Ayukta, there is attachment. The opposite of love is attachment. Selfishness. He is doing it, dedicating it for his sake. In the case of a yukta, it is dedicated for the higher. That's about it. Therefore, for a yukta attains the eternal peace, whereas a yukta doesn't attain the eternal peace. He is constantly bound. The moment you are attached to the result, fruit, you will be constantly be stressed. It is not the action that gives you stress, it is your attachment that gives you stress. So this is the second topic from verse 8 to 12, how all these three people, yogi, sannyasi and jnani, relate to action. Then the third topic from verse 13 to 19 talks about the state of supreme being. When a jnani who is merged with the atma, for all practical purposes, he is Atma, or she is Atma. Body is just functioning. What is that state? That he explains. So he says, Atma is sitting in the city of nine gates, mentally renouncing all actions and self-control. The embodied rests happily in the city of nine gates, neither even acting nor causing to act. Not only a jnani does not have doer shape, she does not even indirectly make other things to act. Nothing. Meaning what? A complete state of paripurna. There is nothing that they want, nothing that they lack. There is nothing that they can get which will enhance their happiness. Even losing something in the world is not going to take away their happiness, because the happiness is coming from within. A state of complete paripurna has been reached. Therefore, he says, rest happily in the city of nine gates. See, this body is looked upon as city of nine gates. He, the Atma, is as it were living here. Trapped. Don't say Atma trapped by the body. Nothing can trap Atma. It is as it were. So, when you don't have this knowledge, you'll be trapped in it. When you have this knowledge, in spite of living in it, you will be out of it. So this is the technique. Being in it, yet out of it. So he says, a jnani lives like that. He exhibits actions like that. Absolutely no doership or enjoyership. City of nine gates. See, in Tamil, when a person goes to shower, he'll say, Melku Utiktuva, means what? For the male. Male means the upper layer. I am going to put some water on my upper layer and come. This is a very fascinating culture. Sanskrit and Tamil, these are all extremely, what do you call, cultural languages. So when you use that language to communicate, there is deep philosophy embedded in it. That's why we call it cultural language. See, remember, the word culture also one of the meanings it has, like in science, in the medicine, they say, no, culture test. I've given my blood sample for culture test. So, culture means they are seeing growth. So, what do you grow? The Indian culture or the Eastern culture generally is to grow the higher aspect. The other is growing the material aspects. That's about it. Every culture is going to grow something or the other. What are you going to focus and grow? Eastern culture, Indian culture is growing the inner joy, inner bliss. Growing towards that inner bliss and attaining that. So, here, in the languages like Tamil and Sanskrit, you will see automatically these kind of beautiful structures. Navadware Pure Dehi. The Puri has nine gates. In the Puri, the Atma is residing. As it were. Use the word as it were. So, that's all. And I do nothing. In the combination, the insentient, erstwhile insentient senses, mind, intellect, they function. I don't cause anything to act, nor do I want to act. This doesn't mean that person does not act. This is the interesting thing. A jnani, go back and read verse 17, 18, 19. In fact, interesting. This was the verse I did in my other class yesterday. So maybe after the class, somebody has recorded it. So I'll put it in this group. You can go back and listen to that. It's a very interesting concept. Love to versus have to. We all do actions because we have to do. As you evolve spiritually, you do because you love to do. There is nobody forcing you. There is nothing that you have to do. Simply love to do. So a jnani functions. It doesn't mean he doesn't function. He will function. But doesn't expect anything in return. No attachment to the fruit. Therefore, no sin, no virtue, no nothing. The knowledge has completely destroyed the ignorance. In whom the knowledge has destroyed the ignorance, just like how sun, when it comes out, it destroys the snow completely. So this verse number 16 is a very interesting verse. He says, but in whom ignorance is destroyed by knowledge, in them knowledge reveals the supreme like the sun. So a lot of people keep on cribbing, you know, I'm trying to get rid of this habit, that habit, I'm not able to get rid of, I don't know what. Just don't focus on getting rid of the habits. Focus on gaining the knowledge. Swami Vivekananda beautifully says, the way to gain strength is not to brood over weakness. You've got to start thinking about strength. But unfortunately, we'll start brooding over our weakness. The modern coaches understand this psychology. So earlier, they used to do it differently things. For example, in golf coaching, earlier, the coaches used to video shoot the trainees swing and then tell them, see, this is where you're going wrong, that is where you're going wrong. The fact that the person is going on focusing on where all he's going wrong, the muscle memory keeps repeating it itself. So nowadays what they do is, they show them the video of the best swings of champions. Tiger Woods, etc. So you're going on looking at the correct way of playing. Therefore, your muscle memory gets into that and automatically you also get corrected. So therefore, you should stop brooding over the weakness and start consciously thinking about the higher. So he says, shift your attention from your shortcomings to gaining knowledge. That's all. Instead of saying this habit is still not gone, that is not gone, just focus on daily study and other sadhana. We saw the 12 yajnas, where food habits, what kind of food intake, when do you take in, how much you take in, and then your sense control, mind control, everything we saw. You do that and also go through study and regulate. The beautiful quotation which they say is, everything has to be in moderation, including moderation. Everything in moderation, including moderation. So therefore, when you continue focusing on the knowledge, knowledge will take care of everything. The sun has to simply rise. The snow will dissolve itself. So that is what he's saying in 16. Then the mind and intellect slowly established in that Atma, keeping that as the goal, all sins are dispelled. Sin technically in Vedantic language means vasanas, no more impurities, all impurities are removed. Then that person, all it's like your vision is colored or covered by cataract. Now you go through the cataract operation, you remove what has been blocking the vision. Once that is removed, then vision becomes very clear. But they say, before cataract, maybe you have used a glass. Now after the cataract, even the glass is not needed for some people, they say. So the vision becomes extremely clear. Why? The obstacle, what is it? The stupidity. What is the stupidity? That I am Lakshmi Narayan. That ignorance. You are thinking like you are cultivated. From childhood, they said, oh, you are fair, you are dark, you are growing, you are not growing, you put on weight, you lost weight, your color is, your hair has turned gray. This, that. There's constant focus. Attention upon your body and keep on celebrating this birthday and all that. So you for a period of time conditioning yourself to believe that our so-and-so person who came into existence, who is going to eventually die one day, try and do everything in this life, keep fighting with death, somehow either postpone death or try and see that you should not die suffering. So whole life is preoccupation with death and living the life. So he says, simply when you gain the knowledge, that imagination, that stupidity that you had about yourself will be removed. then you will be clear that I am Atma, which is manifested in this body. Functioning now. Once you understand that here, within, you instantly see it elsewhere. It cannot be that you will understand only you as Atma and everybody else as body. No, it cannot happen like that. Therefore, he says, very important verse in this chapter, verse 18. Ditya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavisunishchaiva sopatecha pandita samadarshinaha. A pandit, a wise man, has samadarshan. If you have got the knowledge, what is the proof that you've got the knowledge? What is the proof that you are a jnani? Not your ability to give lecture, this, that, nothing. Samadarshana. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane. A brahmin is one who has both vidya and vinaya. Only vidya, but no humility. Vinaya, no use. The moment knowledge hits your head bows down in humility. And then you will view everyone equally. That doesn't mean you don't see the guna beda. You will see the guna beda. But you go beyond the guna beda and see the atma, which is guna atita. So as a result of that, you will have the oneness. That is the state of being where thereafter, having merged in that level, no more coming back. The state you reach where you don't come back. Yes, gatva nani vartante. Meaning what? Once you reach, no more coming back. A person who has reached Atma, meaning all vasanas are exhausted. The vasanas are the one which keeps you coming back into this world. This punarapi jananam and punarapi maranam is because of the vasanas. When all the vasanas are exhausted, where is the question of coming and going? There is no coming and going. In fact, this coming itself is not happened. It's in your mind. This is the thing. They say, coming and going is not there means what? It is not that the other people are coming and going. Go deeply. In Vedanta we say, the world started when you woke up this morning. Along with your mind, the world comes. So when you woke up this morning, you come, when you come, automatically everybody comes. So when you understand that there is only Atma, you are that Atma actually, then there is nothing came. Nothing went, nothing like that. No more coming, going, nothing. So he says, he is established, overcome, but no more coming back. He remains in that spotless, equal condition. That is the state of Supreme Being. This is topic 3 from verse 13 to 19. Then from verse 20 to 29, he says, if you want to reach to that state, you have to come to a state of renunciation. Remember this. Swamiji beautifully gives the diagram. It is there in the book. I don't know which verse Swamiji has put the diagram. So I'm not able to straight away tell you to refer to that particular verse in Swamiji's commentary book. But you all know that diagram probably. Where three roads. One road called Karma Yoga. Other road called Bhakti Yoga. Other road called Jnana Yoga. All these three, each one of us have to do according to our combination, permutation combination. Somebody is more active, somebody is more emotional, somebody is more thinking category. All three everybody has to do, but if you are more of a active category, predominantly you will do Karma Yoga, then less of Bhakti and Jnana. Or if you are predominantly emotional, then more of emotions, less of Karma and Jnana. So predominantly Jnani type, thinking type. Then more of study, reflection, etc. Less of action and bhakti. But all three will be there in all three cases. The permutation combination may vary. But when you continue doing it consistently, you come to a mental state called uparati. Uparati means reveling within. Uparati. Reveling within. A state of self-sufficiency. Inner joy. You come to that state which is called as renunciation. And then, from that state, you go to dharana. You can concentrate and focus and do meditation, attention. It's called dharana. And then comes jnana, which is more of awareness. And through dhyana, you go to become a jnani, which is attainment of self. So karma bhakti jnana will lead you to uparati or renunciation, and renunciation will lead you to dharana and dhyana, and dhyana will finally take you to brahman or atman or samadhi. You will attain self-realization. This is the idea. So therefore, you got to come to that state. What is that? You can say middle path. In the case of a jnani, profit, loss, joy, sorrow, nothing affects. Pleasant, unpleasant, nothing affects. In the case of a jnani, it happens spontaneously. So now you got to slowly come to that state. Meaning what? Mind should become free from all this. Oh, suddenly share market is going up, share market is going down, coronavirus has done this and then that. Doesn't matter. You are focusing on winning the higher. This is called middle path. Sattvic path. Rajasic is excitement. Tamasic is indolence. Sattva is middle. Neither getting excited when you get the pleasant stuff, nor getting dejected when you get the unpleasant stuff. You've got to come to this state. Only then can you plunge into meditation. Otherwise, as you are sitting in meditation, your mind will be thinking, did the share market go up or down? Therefore, first you have to become unattached to the external contacts. So, everywhere before he talks about meditation, in the Bhagavad Gita you can see Sri Krishna almost meticulously keeps on emphasizing on sense control and mind control. But unfortunately in the world, everybody wants to plunge into meditation without adhering to any level of sense control or mind control. This is really unfortunate. And there are lots of people, they think through meditation, many things will change overnight. As if they think it's one cure for everything. So you can do all sorts of nonsense throughout the day and then plunge into meditation. How is it possible? It's like shutting down the computer. When you shut down the computer, when you give the instruction, shut down, the computer will say, there are programs running at the background. Please wait. We are switching them off. Slowly to switch them off one by one, and then finally the computer will shut down. And if you force shut down, then when you switch it down again, it will slowly come up. Because it's whatever was pending it will do, and then only it will come up. You can't force the mind. It has to happen naturally. So therefore he says, you got to follow sense control. And then beautifully verse 22 and 23 again, a very important verses of chapter 5. He says, the contact-born enjoyments are all wounds of sorrow. Yehi samsparshaja bhogaha dukkayonaya evate. Dukkayoni, wounds of sorrow. They are all wounds of sorrow. Firstly, if you have a desire, what does desire mean? Desire itself means agitation. The moment you have a desire, you cannot rest content till you get the object of the desire or eliminate the desire. Unfortunately, we think we will get rid of the desire by fulfilling the object. Therefore, we are running after merely to fulfill the object. While we do that, the desire keeps on increasing. So, in spite of fulfilling, we go through hell. And to fulfill the desire is not a joke. You firstly, to fulfill the desire, you've got to struggle like anything. And after so much of struggle, and when you, if at all, you fulfill the desire, that itself is a very big hit. If even after fulfilling, how long you will retain it, you don't know. And will it be taken away from me? The thought whether I will fulfill it, the thought how soon it is going to be taken away from me, and eventually when you lose the object or the craving for more, all these if you see are nothing but sorrow. Therefore, he says, this is wounds of sorrow. Contact-born enjoyments are wounds of sorrow. When he says that, he doesn't say you should not enjoy the things that come from contact. Let that not be the end-all and be-all of your life. So therefore, keep a middle path, act for a goal, take your mind away from all this, understanding its limitations. How do you do that? He says, do not allow it to become a vega. The word you need to really focus on is vega in verse 23. See, this vega concept you got to understand a little bit. If you are playing cricket on your terrace and you hit the ball and the ball goes through the staircase, let's say, when it bounces on the first step, if you are not able to catch it, next it may go to the seventh step. If you don't catch it there, it will go to 25th. If you can't catch it there, it will go to 150th. So, in the beginning itself, you got to bring in intellect and direct your desires. So, renunciation step starts from there, you can say. So, therefore, he says, bring the desires under the control of your intellect. Do not allow it to become a vega. Once it has become a vega, you will not be able to control it. That will control you. In many of our cases, this is what is happening. You are not controlling it. They are desires. It's like somebody taking the dog for a walk. I don't know whether they are taking the dog for a walk or the dog is taking them for a walk. Whichever direction the dog is going, they are going in the direction. So this is what is going on in us. So he says, you've got to practice that. When you do that slowly, slowly, firstly you practice managing and controlling desire. Then you will rise above the desire. That state is called renunciation. Where? He beautifully says in verse number 24, he who is happy within, this is what I said, uparati. Uparati means one who is enjoying within. The sukham is within. Antasukaha, he says. Antasukaha means one who is happy within. Happy within means what? With or without the object, he is happy. Now, during this lockdown condition, how many of us will be happy if the Zoom is not working, I don't know. If the internet is not working, if the mobile phone connection is not there, I think most of us would end up in a cell. So here he says, a person who is Atma Ratihi, who is enjoying within, happy within, rejoices within, Antara Ramaha, who is enjoying within, rejoicing within, and Antar Jyotihi, he is illumined within. As a result of the knowledge of the self, he has become absolutely self-sufficient. And such a person, he says, he slowly becomes one. Meaning what? He is now qualified to do meditation. Atmarati, all that has to happen. Only after self-control, after having controlled your mind from getting into desire and anger, you can get into meditation. In fact, the next chapter will dwell on meditation in detail. The chapter is called as Dhyana Yoga. But before that, he already starts a little bit of it in this chapter, verse 27 and 28. He talks about shutting out the external contact and fixing the gaze as though between the eyebrows and all that he talks about here. We will talk about it in detail in the next chapter, Yoga of Meditation, Dhyana Yoga. So, he is now coming to meditation. So you can come to meditation through sense control, and mind withdrawal or Atma Ratihi, Upa Ratihi state, got to bring yourself, and then thereafter externally anything may happen. Tomorrow the share market can go to that height and many people can make whatever they are making. You are quietly focusing on Atma. That state of self-development we should have come to come to meditation. That is why this topic is called renunciation, precedes meditation and realization. So then through meditation, what happens? The realizes the self, which is verse number 29, the last verse, which is Voktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He becomes like Ishwara. He is attained. The Jiva Ishwara Aikya has happened. The Jiva has understood that I am actually Ishwara. The wave has understood that I am actually water. The wave is also water. Ocean is also water. So he says, through meditation, the final individuality which was lingering a little bit, but also merges. He says, having known me as the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerity, Atma inside is sitting, and that is actually the Ishwara, which is the real enjoyer. Whether you offered grains and everything to a Devata, ultimately it is enjoyed by the Ishwara. Ultimately it is to the Ishwara. You apply to the agricultural ministry for some finance. You apply to the urban development ministry for some finance, for some funding. But ultimately it is the government of India which is sanctioning it. So similarly, that is the supreme lord of all worlds. Everything is governed by that Brahman. You become Brahman, which is the friend of all beings, and you attain peace. Therefore, you got to move from yogi to sannyasi to jnani, and then slowly, slowly you will become one with Brahman. When you become one with Brahman, you attain that absolute peace and bliss. This is the summary of chapter 5. So next week we will do the summary of chapter 6, which is Yoga of Meditation, Dhyana Yoga. Let us now conclude the class. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Manasendriyairva Buddhyatmanava Buddhyatmanava Prakrite Swabhavat Prakrite Swabhavat Karomi Adhya Karomi Adhya Sakalam Parasmahi Sakalam Parasmahi Narayanayeti Samarpayami Narayanayeti Samarpayami.